This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is a podcast edition of Technogaze on Joy 94.9. In Melbourne, you can tune in on Monday night, 7pm on 94.9 FM or online at joy.org.au/listenlive. For more information, visit joy.org.au.
Buy it, use it, break it, fix it, trash it, change it, melt, upgrade it, charge it, point it, zoom it, press it, snap it, work it, quick erase it, write it, cut it, paste it, save it, load it, check it, quick rewrite it, plug it, play it, burn it, rip it, drag it, drop it, zip, unzip it, lock it, fill it, curl it, find it, view it, code it, jump, unlock it, surf it, scroll it, pose it, click it, cross it, crack it, switch, update it, name it, read it, tune it, print it, scan it, send it, fax, rename it, touch it, bring it, pay it, watch it, turn it, leave it,
stop. Hello. And welcome to Technogaze, the show where we look into the past, observe the current, and gaze into the future of technology. My name is Mark Powney, and with me in the studio is Paul Miguel. Hello, Paul.
Good evening, everyone. We've been left alone today.
We have.
Some people got an extended holiday weekend, didn't they?
Very, very lucky of them. So tonight, first of all, thank you to Petro, Steve, and the Bish for a safe ride home in the camper van. And, of course, Matt for a lovely news bulletin there. This is, of course, a very cold Queen's birthday.
10 degrees.
Yes.
It's winter, isn't it?
My ride in this afternoon was, colder than a typical morning. And, of course, mention is that the Apple Worldwide Developer Conference is about to start over in San Francisco. So I wish I was over there. We've got some joy people, in fact, that are there. Cade, if you're listening at all online, then here's a quick hello. It might be a bit late for them, though,
I'm guessing. It's 3 o'clock in the morning. Well, they could have been staying up from last night.
Yeah, so WWDC starts at 3 a.m. Tomorrow morning, which is very exciting for some of us. Looking forward to some...
I'll be sleeping, thank you.
So first of all, I guess let's start off with some news.
According to CNET.com.au, in a news item written by Renee LeMay and Ina Fried, the first retail sales of Windows 7 will take place in New Zealand and Australia on October 22nd. It's been confirmed. Apparently, Microsoft's release of the Windows 7 will follow the Sun, and for those people, it's usually help desks that use the terminology "follow the Sun."
Yes.
Which basically means it starts when the beginning of the day and sort of goes through the time zones.
Yes,
so it's going obviously starting at this side of the world because we get the sun before the the Americans and the Europeans. Anyway, a large number of Australian organisations, apparently, including the National Australia Bank, Commonwealth Bank, the and Centrelink, they've already started looking at Windows 7, and Telstra have said that they were going to eventually migrate to the platform.
Mm. Do you reckon they're looking at Vista at all, or have they looked at Vista before? Or?
No, I don't think I don't think business touched Vista in any way, shape, or form.
So they're probably hanging out.
I'm surprised that these companies are already looking if it hasn't been released, because they usually wait for second release to make sure that all the bugs have been ironed out. Because if you're going to roll out, like a bank, it's thousands of copies.
Mm.
You want to make sure, you don't want to do that every 3 days with patches.
I guess a lot of people are saying that Windows 7 is the Service Pack 2 of Vista, in fact.
3, I think.
There is already a Service Pack 2.
Yeah. Based on what's been said about the people who've tested it out, it is much better than Vista. So maybe the pickup will be much quicker, because one of the problems with Vista, I believe, was security, and especially banks, they get very nervous about security, and so they should.
Yes.
The only thing is that pricing is still unknown. I don't know how much it's going to cost.
Yeah.
And apparently, Microsoft has said there's a worldwide confirmation that they have a technology guarantee clause for those people buying Vista machines after June 26th. so that if you buy the machine, you either get either free upgrades to 7 or a very inexpensive upgrade.
Right, so at least wait until June 26th before you
exactly,
buy
yes.
Vista.
You'll save some money that way.
I guess it's a good thing to keep in mind. What's up next? The government's proposed internet filtering has come under further fire this week after it was revealed that the criteria of success for the recent trials is, well, non-existent. Groups including the Greens, the Opposition and the Electronic Frontier Australia Group have raised concerns that the lack of success criteria for the trials illustrates that the policy itself doesn't have any clear goals. Accusations are flying around that the implementation of this policy will be driven by the technology, and anyone who works in IT, particularly on the project management side, will no doubt understand this is a very slippery slope. If you're worried about what the technology can do before you work out what you actually want to do with the technology, that's where you end up with a massive pile of poo.
Yes, and well, Mikey is a good example of that. When they had a budget and a deadline to have it delivered even before they knew what they wanted or how the technology worked.
It's a very bad situation to be in. So a quote from the Electronic Frontiers Australia spokesman, Colin Jacobs, the pilot seems to have been a political exercise in deflecting criticism without any benchmarks. The government can claim it was a success regardless of cost or performance issues that ISPs encounter. So the estimated cost for implementing the policy, according to the most recent federal budget figures, is at $44.5 million. And at the current scope of, I think it's only 10,000 odd
websites.
So, yeah. Was it 10,000 or 1,000? I can't remember. Anyway, it worked out to be about $90,000 per website that has ended up costing the government to blacklist. So, yeah, it's not a happy day for the government, but probably, you know, at least some more light is being shed on what's actually going on out there, and the right people are causing the right waves.
Well, I think one of the issues with all that is that because it's a blacklist and no one's supposed to know about it, everything is very secretive. So it's hard to comment or criticize something when, you know, although many people criticize something they don't know anything about. But, you know, without looking at seeing what you're doing,
yes,
you can't really pick on, you know, a specific point or an issue within the project that will cause all of the problems.
It's hard to do it in a meaningful way, I guess.
Yes.
We'll just take a quick break. We'll be back very shortly with some more news.
And coming up after the news, we're going to be actually talking about free email providers. We're going to be comparing Gmail and Hotmail, different aspects of that. And towards the end of the show, we'll be talking about video conferencing software. But meanwhile, back at the news.
Yes.
And back to our first minister, Stephen Conroy.
We love you, Stephen.
But he's actually done something good this time.
Oh, really?
Yes. This came as a surprise to me because I found out, today, that on Friday it was Change Your Password Day. And I've just nicknamed it SYPD.
I don't think that quite came through the microphones. How's it go again?
Anyway, but actually it's a serious thing. Is that some people don't pay enough attention to their passwords. And today was part of the National E-Security Awareness Week, seeking to raise awareness about staying safe online. The government is keen to promote online confidence, Senator Conroy told ABC Radio. Quote, "This can be as simple as getting a better, stronger password, and most importantly, updating it regularly. Senator Conroy recommended passwords of 8 characters, with a mixture of upper and lower case letters, including at least one number and one symbol, which would make it hard for people to become victims of cybercrime."
I wonder what he has to say about remembering those passwords, because the biggest problem I have around passwords, and I'm sure everyone does. Yes, that it's hard to remember the password that you keep. I mean,
well, what I do is I have 3 different passwords.
Yes.
Variations of 3 different. One is for things I really don't care if anybody finds out the password.
Right.
And then the utmost, like banking and certain things. Then I have a strong, similar to what, actually it's a good idea what Senator Conroy has suggested. Minimum of 8.
Yes.
And lowercase, uppercase, and one number and one symbol.
Right.
And the idea is to replace letters with numbers, like E's and threes, O's and zeros.
Oh, yes.
But you don't want to be too, like threes and E's, you know, probably a bit close to guess. Mm. But most people that guess passwords, they will probably use a computer. It just makes it harder to go through more than just the alphabets to come up to break the code.
The dictionary attacks that are referred to in the black hat community, I guess, as well.
Or like if you live in a foreign country, you know, your hometown, you know, that's been changed with numbers and letters, could be a good password.
Yeah, yeah.
Hint, hint.
I actually find, we might have some people.
No, only one person knows my hometown, so.
Oh, right.
Yes, but like I said, I've capitalized letters, I've changed letters to numbers, I have characters, so it'll be hard to guess.
Security through obscurity.
Yes. The Association Bankers of Australia CEO, David Bell, said that smart and safe internet use can minimize customers' exposure to becoming victims of this crime. The ABA, the Australian Banking Association, and the Federal Police have reminded people to beware of hoax emails purporting to come from their banks, as well as bogus websites that ask for a person's banking details.
Mm.
And that's the biggest issue, is banking.
Yeah, well, that's actually related to the next news item I have, which is around the Commonwealth Bank. Apparently they're, at the moment, in fact, I'm seeing this myself, there's been lots of spam coming through.
Yes, I think I got a couple. I don't even bank with the Commonwealth.
Yeah, it's quite odd that I'm not a Commonwealth Bank customer either, and yet I'm getting all these emails. And the thing is, they come through even though I'm not a customer. But what's worse is they're one of the few spam emails that get through Gmail's very good spam filtering system. So not only do I get them, but I'm actually getting them in my inbox as well.
Well, the thing is, again, with filters like antivirus, they're basically catching up.
Mm.
They find a way how these emails get generated, and they try to catch them, and then they find a different way to send it.
Yeah.
Just a little aside, if you get an email and like with a bank and you don't bank with them, most likely the email was either stolen from somewhere, or probably in most cases is actually a generated email.
Yes.
So they'll pick, say, @joy.org.au to use as an example, and then just go through the alphabet and make up names that go before the at sign and send them out. And then once in a while, you know, they hit somebody who's so if you get an email from a bank and you don't even bank with that bank, don't open it. And even if you bank with them, banks don't send out emails, and definitely not with any links inside.
Yeah. Well, in fact, Commonwealth Bank spokesman Steve Batten said the bank was working closely with the Australian Federal Police. There's a task force there, Australian High Tech Crime Centre, they're working with, and they're trying to track down the scammers. However, it seems they haven't been particularly successful with this quote. As soon as we close them down, they're opening up elsewhere. In addition to the emails coming through, the Australian Payments Clearing Association has reported a 33% increase in both volume and value of fraudulent online payments at the end of the 2008 calendar year. So, seems like it's becoming worse and worse.
Yeah. Again, just going back, if there is a link in the email, because banks do not put links on emails, or even the government.
In fact, the same Commonwealth Bank spokesman has reiterated that very fact. You know, they will never request the customers to enter sensitive information over an email. It just doesn't happen. What's actually quite bad about the current situation, though, is that the attackers are setting up local Australian phone numbers and sending them out as if they are from specific Commonwealth Bank employees. So they're pretending that they're an employee of a local bank, say in Queensland, and the email contains that phone number with a message to actually call them. And of course, that's a particular concern, because the general awareness around emails is to avoid clicking links from an email. But there's still a perception out there that it's not so bad to call phone numbers inside an email, particularly if they come from a particular person that looks like a Commonwealth Bank email address. So it's something to look out for.
Yeah, basically, don't give your information, your credit card number, anything, and especially your passwords, over the phone.
Mm.
People are calling out of the blue. You have no idea who they are.
Do as I do. Always look up the number on their official website and call that number. And if you can't get through to the right person from that, then, well, it's not worth bothering with.
Exactly.
Yep. Kapersky.
Kaspersky. It's all about security now, isn't it? I hadn't heard of Kaspersky. They're a security vendor, and they have a very small local presence since last year. Apparently, they opened an office in Melbourne.
Hmm.
The Australian website, Kaspersky, and that's spelled kaspersky.com.au, it's actually run by Microbe, and it claims an address at Seven Hills, New South Wales, as the Australian New Zealand distributor. So it looks like they're in the process of increasing their footprint here in Australia.
Mm.
They've experienced rapid business growth in Australia and New Zealand market last year. They're aiming to improve that. And the new position that they're looking for, they're actually looking for a new person, so, with people unemployed, they're looking for an antivirus analyst who would head up the local support team.
Right.
So they're looking for, they have ways of selling it, but they want local support.
So these are like call center type management roles, or is
well, actually, this first one, they say a big chunk of the job is really PR, is basically doing marketing for the company. Like I said, I'm not in the security business, but I'm in the IT business. Yeah. I hadn't heard of them,
right.
So obviously they haven't done a good job in publicizing themselves.
They need a PR person,
obviously. they're looking, according to the marketing manager, worldwide marketing manager, they're looking for a person to be a talking head to map out what's going on in Australia and comment on something as it happens. Interviews won't happen until July, so you don't need to rush.
Mm.
And Kaspersky's three-tier program signs up resellers as accredited gold or platinum partners and is designed to give more comprehensive technical support and services. And their office is in and lab is in Moscow.
Oh, right.
Yes, hence the name Kaspersky.
Oh.
Somehow I don't know, the name doesn't roll off the tongue and...
Oh, actually, I think it's got Kaspersky. A good ring to it. Kaspersky. Yeah.
It's
interesting, though. I mean, most of the security companies that are big in Australia or most
worldwide
we know of are from the US. So it's a good thing that things are diversified.
It goes back to the old thing. It's not how good the tool is. It's how it's the marketing.
Yeah,
Microsoft is an example.
No.
It's just no. I'm not having a go at them. But that's just the case. But there are others. Like AVG comes from Czech Republic.
Oh, really?
The antivirus,
Czech
Republic, and so there are other companies, but they struggle to compete with the American market because if you make it in America, you already have a big market, so you have the money to spread your way through the world.
Yeah,
and all these companies in the smaller countries, they just don't have the budgets.
Yeah,
like Opera browser is from Finland, I believe.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
And I think it's a great browser.
Hmm.
But it doesn't support everything, or not all plugins support Opera, which is a shame.
Yeah,
because I like the look and the way they're quite fast.
Do you think we've got time for one more? Yeah, I think so. The Pirate Party has managed to get one seat in the European Union Parliament.
The what party?
The Pirate Party.
You're not talking about Somalians, are
you? No. This is actually a legitimate party, and it gives me good reason to change my Facebook language to English in pirate speak, which is an interesting experience I've had over the last 2 days. But that's an aside. With the recent anti-piracy court case in Sweden over the piratebay.org, one of the outcomes was that a large number of Swedish citizens banded together to create a new political party known as the Pirate Party. The party isn't just about the court case against the Pirate Bay, though. In fact, it was largely born due to new power rushed through the Swedish government. Government systems, such as the power for intelligence agencies to silently wiretap international traffic, the forcing of ISPs to retain data on incoming and outgoing email, as well as what sites people are using and visiting, and laws that enable the music and movie industry to demand information from ISPs with little oversight from their judicial system. So it sounds a lot like what's going on in the US with their the legislation there. DMCA.
Yeah, DMCA,
that's
yeah.
Fine. So in recent elections in Sweden, the Pirate Party have garnered enough votes to obtain at least one seat in the EU Parliament, and according to exit polls, they'll possibly even get two. At last count, the party holds a 7% of all votes in Sweden, and in fact from up to 30-year-olds, they were the most popular party.
So we're talking about a one-issue party who's actually managed to get a seat.
Yes. Well, it's one issue. It was born from the Pirate Bay trial, but it actually stems further than that. It's about civil liberties and, you know...
Yes, and privacy.
Property and privacy and all the rest of it, yeah.
Yeah, and actually winning a seat in the European Parliament is more important than in Sweden, the Swedish Parliament, because now they have the whole of Europe as a forum to speak up.
Indeed, and that's a good thing, because similar elections have been held throughout Europe. And similar parties have been created in other countries as well, but not to the success.
That's how the Greens started years back in Europe. So, yes.
Oh, there you go.
I mean, we've been having a go at this pirate issue for a while. Not that, well, I'll speak personally, I'm not advocating that should steal music and all that. It's just the way this has been handled by putting the onus on the ISPs to manage the traffic and all this, as opposed to the companies making the music and the movies much more easily accessed. And I don't mean for free.
Yeah. There's also talk about them having to change their business model, in fact.
That's the biggest issue.
Instead of sending things out in CD format and that sort of thing, instead of creating the content that way, they can just do it all digitally and make it easily available to everyone, and people will buy it. There's no question about that. I mean, it's already happening. Similar to the American voting system, the Swedish elections are not compulsory, though. So the count was at 43% of citizens that had gone and voted for that. So the 7% votes equated to 200,000-odd Swedes voting for that particular party, which is a good thing. Rick Folkvinge, the leader of the Pirate Party, responded to news of the outcome by saying, "We've felt the wind blow in our sails." Arr. No, that was my insert there. He didn't go arr at all. But together we have today changed the landscape of European politics. No matter how this night ends, we have changed it. So it's very happy news for that particular fellow.
You're listening to Technogaze on Joy 94.9. And coming up shortly, we'll be comparing Gmail and Hotmail, as well as talking about video conferencing. You can reach us on the phone 96992949, email onair@joy.org.au, or SMS 0427JOY949, and you can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/technogaze.
What's up next? We've got a comparison of free email providers, don't we, Paul?
Yes. Oh, you sometimes surprise me with these things. Yes.
So we're looking at Gmail and Hotmail, the two, I guess, one of the two biggest email providers, we could say.
Yes, and of course Hotmail was first.
Yes. Before even Microsoft had it, it was around.
Yeah, no, they bought it, didn't they? That was back in late 80s, wasn't it? It's a long time ago.
Oh, it wouldn't have been that early. I don't know if the internet existed in the late... Well, not in the form that... that Hotmail was given in. But the Hotmail, interesting fact is that it's derived from the word or the acronym HTML. So hot, HOTMAIL is where it came from originally.
Well, I didn't know that. I just, no.
File that away in your important facts.
Never to be retrieved again. Well, actually, it's no longer Hotmail either. You can still go to hotmail.com, but it's actually redirected to mail.live.com.
Oh, right. That's right. They've gone through this push of changing their branding to live.
To live. Mm. And now that live search has become Bing, I don't know whether it's going to be Mail Bing or Bing Mail. Or I don't know how far they're going to go with this transformation.
Mm. We looked at the the user interface aspects of it, and we also looked at how they associate to other functions provided by the major companies. So, you know, Google, for example, has Gtalk and Google Reader that is all integrated into Gmail, and Hotmail, similar deal?
No. No, Hotmail, they don't have the not as such as a Gmail, but basically, if you look at the layout, they still concentrate on email being their number one product.
Yep.
Where Google, I think they've they start pushing the different means of communicating besides writing.
Yes.
And I guess the ultimate is Wave. That's still coming.
Yes. Coming soon. I think that's why we come up with this particular topic. So we'll look at them before Wave, because apparently it's a big change.
Yeah, because Hotmail now, I guess, because it's sort of grown, I don't think it's been thought out, as usual with Microsoft and some of the things. They'll buy one company, then buy the other, and as it happens in many IT companies, and then they try to make it work together.
Yeah.
So it doesn't seem to be as well integrated as the Gmail and Google products,
right?
But if we look at Mail, the look and feel is pretty standard. On the left side, you have the your boxes. You know, your inbox, your draft, sent, deleted, infected items. I've never had any infected items, so I'm not sure if they're applying any antivirus.
Yeah. That's interesting, that, because on Gmail there's a spam folder, but there's no sort of
They have a junk folder in Hotmail,
right?
But they don't, but also have infect. So I'm not sure what how that works, because I couldn't find any information on it.
Right,
and also you can create your own folders.
Yes,
and I think Gmail in Gmail it's called
labels. Yeah, so it's actually a slightly different paradigm. It's not about folders and putting things away in a folder, not using the whole file folder analogy. It's actually it's sort of like tagging an email. You're saying, okay, this is labeled as a Joy email, for example, or a Facebook email or whatever, and you can actually have multiple labels per email, which is quite handy to
So it's a way of segregating, and if you're doing searching on emails, like you want all the emails related to Joy, then you can have a list.
Yeah.
So which I think is better than having folders. But is it can you set a rule to automatically label something, say if it's from a specific email address?
Yeah.
You can set up.
Yeah, you can actually. It's basically got the same filtering system as any other email package out there. So it can look at your from address or your to address or
like Outlook
line or whatever, and then do different things with it, including applying labels to it. So you can say this is a label of Joy, and you can also make it skip the inbox as well. So it's sort of by default always goes into the inbox, and it's not until you explicitly tell it otherwise that it leaves your inbox. So as an example, I have a marketing rule where all my marketing emails, which aren't necessarily spam, but they're actually, you know, sort of trying to sell me something, they're always from known providers, so they always get put into the marketing label.
Yes. Well, I couldn't find a filter for Hotmail.
Really?
Yes. So it's after you see the message, either in the inbox or open it, then you can move it to a specific box.
Right.
Which surprised me. Because I should mention now that I do use Hotmail, but I get it through Outlook. I actually synchronize using Outlook. So Outlook downloads the messages.
Yeah.
So that I have all my messages in one location. Don't have to go to websites.
Well, perhaps they're trying not to take any market away from their normal email packages like Outlook and Outlook Express, because that sort of functionality is more in their client application.
Yeah, and it's also Microsoft Exchange, the actual server that most people have at work, that where you keep all those rules. But having said that, Hotmail Online has changed drastically from when I first got my email address. And again, it goes back probably 15 years I've had the Hotmail.
Really?
Yes.
That long? Wow.
Yes. Because I've been here for 10. Yeah, it would be about 15 years.
Before that, right.
Yeah.
Because I've had my Hotmail account as well for a while. It's just a place for spam, though.
Well,
I've used it in so many websites that, you know, to sign up or whatever.
That's just it. Like, if you're wondering why you'd want another email address, I have my BigPond address that I use for my personal, family, and important communication, like my banking and such.
Yes.
But anything that I subscribe or go to a website or get newsletters. Then I use my Hotmail.
Yeah.
That way it's easier to get all the spam out of the way.
Yeah. I guess the interesting thing about the spam filtering in Gmail, it's always been pretty good for me. The only thing is that maybe one or two emails have been erroneously marked as spam. For the 3 years that I've actually been using it. I've only been using Gmail for three. I made the switch 3 years ago. And it's very rare for a spam message to come through to my inbox. It's just a single click as well. When you get one, you can just go, okay, report spam, and I presume it actually marks it as spam and helps Google determine if there's going to be other
emails. Yeah, same thing with
Hotmail. Yeah, so. What about integration with other...
Other
functions of Microsoft.
Well, Microsoft, along with Hotmail, when you go to the website, you have calendar feature,
mm-hmm.
Which you can import from other calendars, including Google's calendaring.
Mm.
But it's just an import. There's no synchronization.
Right.
You can also set up events. SkyDrive.
Well, what's SkyDrive? Is it like a pig flying with a... a hard drive attached to it or something?
Why pigs?
Pigs
don't fly.
Does it work?
It's actually just file storage and sharing, so that you can just put up, upload documents and photos, and I'm not sure if there's a limitation on music or what have you.
Right.
So that you can share with family, friends, or you can make it public, where anyone can have access if they have the address.
Oh, really? And is that through like a web interface, is it? Or
Yes, it's just one of the options within Hotmail.
Mm-hmm.
And you can also create groups, so a bit of socializing that you can do.
Yep.
You can create spaces for people to share lists of music, books that you're reading. So some kind, let's say a reading club.
Yep.
You can create that. Family safety, which I didn't look much into it because I wasn't interested, which is about setting up filters.
Mm.
Mobile, which is connecting through your mobile for Hotmail.
Right.
There's about downloads and Office Live, access to Office Live, which is, again, using saving documents on the web for free, up to 25 gigabytes.
Gigabytes
of free space.
Oh, okay. That makes my email allowance on Gmail quite small in comparison.
This is just for the Office Live.
For the document side of it, isn't it?
The inbox is as much as you need.
Really?
It'll grow. As your inbox is growing, it'll grow your space.
Oh, right.
If they see a very rapid growth,
yes,
then they'll send you an email saying, slow down, you're going too fast. But if it's like a daily thing, you know, 2-3 emails a day or whatever,
yep.
It'll just keep on increasing the size.
It's like a Simon and Garfunkel song. Yep. Slow down, you're going too fast.
Yes.
Want to make the morning last. I guess in Google's world, there's the Google Docs integration as well, which is an online document management sort of system as well.
Yes.
You can collaborate and edit documents. And interestingly, some documents in your Gmail account, say if you get a PDF document, for example, it will open that, or it will have the ability to open that document in Google Docs. So that means you don't need any special software on your own workstation to view that particular document. But it doesn't work for any Word documents or any Microsoft Office documents, which is an interesting thing. Even though Google Docs does have the ability to import and export Microsoft Office documents, it doesn't give you the ability to open them up in from your Gmail account.
Might have something to do with copyrights and Google not wanting to pay
the licensing for the...
Yes, yeah. Which is probably the same thing why iTunes doesn't work with WMA files, because it'll have to pay Microsoft for the rights to play those tracks.
Yeah. Although the other interesting thing about it is that Gmail does provide the option to view a Word document as HTML, so you can view it inside your web browser just as a plain HTML file. It's a great way just to quickly view the contents, but it doesn't really hold the formatting true, because it's trying to convert it to HTML and usually does a poor job because the markup language in Microsoft Office documents are a bit haphazard, to say the least. So
you're getting too technical for most of us.
As someone who's worked with documents, trying to create them programmatically, it's not the most easiest thing to work on. Is there anything else about Hotmail?
Well, you can link into. Obviously, you can have your contacts. You can customize your mail and different things, automatically sorting your mail into folders. Oh, sorry. I didn't read my notes. you can sort email into folders, apparently. Anyway, but the other things is also messaging, IM and email, and also photos and movies. You can have your photo gallery, and it's in beta version, but Movie Maker.
Right. Is this an online thing?
An online movie maker.
Wow.
So the idea is that if you're not home, it's like if you're traveling, especially if you're going on, long leave or, traveling through Europe or what have you, where you can go to cafes and upload your photos so you don't have to always carry around with you and keep them safe. And also, if you have the time, make movies. But if you're on holidays and you're making movies online, something's wrong.
Well, you might be in the hotel and it might be an area that... closes at 5 or something.
You're in the wrong area. And same thing with Gmail. There's a blogging facility. I haven't used their blogging.
With Blogger or?
It's called Writer. And it's Windows Live Writer. Blogging is a breeze. You can add photos and videos, format everything just so, and publish to most blogging services.
This is with Microsoft, is it?
This is Microsoft. Yeah, right. See, it's becoming very blurred. We started to talk about Gmail and Hotmail.
Yes.
But everything's blurring because they're adding all these other functionalities.
Services,
and it's sort of semi-integrated. Mm. And like, it's not a smooth transfer between the items and the different options. But it is something you can just start at one point, like hotmail.com or gmail.com, and from there you can do everything you want to do online.
And one of those things, I think you mentioned it earlier, instant messaging in Gmail is provided through Gtalk. There's actually a little client that comes up in your email browser where you can start looking at contacts and that sort of thing. Which nicely segues to what's coming up next, which is a talk about a quick chat about video conferencing, which is one of the functions that Gtalk provides. But we're also looking at other programs as well, not just Gtalk, but iChat for the Apple Mac and Skype as well, and another one called Camfrog, which I just found in the last week. Just to let you know, we can be contacted on air at joy.org.au, and you can also SMS us, I should say, 0427JOY949. We're giving away a 12-month subscription to Friday Prepaid Perks, which is a Perks membership for 12 months on the website friday.com, FRIDAE.com. So if you would like to win that prize, call 9699-2949 and Robert will be out there waiting to take your call.
And Friday.com is a place where you can read news and certain things from the Asia Pacific, as well as meet other gay and lesbian people. It's not gender specific, is it?
No.
It's not like Manhunt or anything. That's just for men. So it's a way to meet people online for sex or not for sex. Obviously, if they're overseas, it's hard to have sex. Physical sex, anyway.
Indeed. This is TechnoGaze on Joy 94.9. Just going to talk a bit about video conferencing software. I had a look at some of the software available out there just this last week. And I started off being an Apple user. I started off using iChat. Now, it's an interesting thing. I mean, most of the video conferencing software products out there are chat software, but they just have a video conferencing component on top of them. So, for example, iChat, you can chat to your buddies and that sort of thing. And if you've both got the video capability, you can have a video conference with those people as well. So, before you get into the video chat part, though, a confusing thing I found with iChat was that you need to sign up for an account, and the account that you sign up with basically is separate to the software itself. Where in MSN Live Messenger, for example, when you initially run the program, it comes up with a prompt: do you want to sign up for an account, and takes you through the steps to actually do that. Whereas when I used iChat, it assumed that you already had an account with a provider and that you wanted to just associate it with that account. So be sure to, if you've got a Mobile Me account, which is an Apple thing, or a Mac.com account, which is also a Mac thing, be sure to enter those details in. Otherwise, you can actually use the AOL Instant Messenger option to sign up for a free account that works with iChat. So that will give you the ability to create a list of buddies for communicating with, and if both people have a video option on their computer, if you've got a webcam installed and they have a webcam installed, then they can share their webcam with you as well, which is what we're talking about tonight. You can also, one of the features of iChat is that you can share your video, your computer screen as well. So you can say, I'm going to show my entire screen to the person on the other end, and then enable them, in fact, to start clicking around as well. So it puts a full screen on their screen of what's on your screen, and you get to use it interactively, which is an interesting feature that kind of related to video.
But yeah, actually, something similar to that, a couple weeks ago, I was on the phone with a help desk for a particular piece of software, and he sent me an invitation through an email, and I went to his website and basically allowed him to have a look at my desktop,
right?
Which saves so much when you're trying to, you know, explain to somebody, click here or click there. You can visualize it,
yeah.
Or even if you're sharing a, if you're working together on a presentation, let's say, and you don't want to have to send, you know, it could be a large presentation, you don't want to have to send it across the internet through email to the other person, you can both be looking at the same page and determining what you want to do. And, you know, I think it's a great way. And I have to admit, until I tried it today, I was one of the, it's not that important, and which is kind of odd for me to say, because, you know, my family's in Canada, and I get to talk to them, but I don't get to see them.
Right.
So maybe I'm going to have to, when I go visit them next, I might just talk to them about, because I think one of my sisters has a webcam, so we should start using it.
Because that's the only barrier, isn't it? You just need to have a webcam, and they're usually pretty cheap. They're like $40 or $50 to buy a decent quality webcam, and it plugs into USB, doesn't it?
Yes, and I think now many of the new laptops come with the webcam built in, which is the case of my netbook, which is what we used this afternoon. They put the camera right on top of the screen, just on that edge, on the top, in the middle.
Yes.
And, you know, if you're sitting looking at your screen, you're right on. And and when the camera is on, you get this little white light, so you know you're on.
And those with the MacBook Pro would also encounter the same feature. So we had a look at GTalk, didn't we, today?
I think that you don't have to worry about accounts or anything. If you just have a Gmail account, both people, then you can just chat through, do a video chat.
Yep.
I was using my netbook, as I mentioned, which is only 1.6 gigahertz, and it was struggling to do the video.
Right.
I had nothing else open, and it was at 100%. So
it has to do a fair amount of compression and decompression of the feed.
Yeah, it has to send your feed and receive the other feed and display it.
Yes,
But the response was pretty quick.
Yeah, it was. We found that it was easy enough to have a decent conversation and see what the other person was doing as well.
Well, scratching our faces seems to be what we did the most. Yeah. Obviously, I became self-conscious about, you know, scratching here, scratching my face. At least I didn't scratch any other parts, but that was off screen anyway. It's time to go, isn't it? We've run out of time.
I think it is. Yes. The others are waiting. This has been TechnoGaze on Joy 94.9.
If you have any questions for us during the week, you can send an email to technogaze@joy.org.au.
Yeah, and you can also follow us on our Twitter feed and propose some questions up there as well, which is twitter.com/technogaze.
joy.org.au/technogaze is our page.
That's right. My name is Mark Pownie.
I'm Paul Miguel. See you next week.
Good night.
This is a podcast edition of TechnoGaze on Joy 94.9. In Melbourne, you can tune in on Monday night, 7 p.m. on 94.9 FM or online at joy.org.au/listen-live. For more information, visit joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.